Welcome to the Strang Report with Steve Strang on the Charisma Podcast Network. This episode was produced to discuss and address issues within our nation and around the world from a Christian worldview.
Can you believe that Charisma Magazine has been published 500 times? Even I was surprised when I found that out. And today we're celebrating it with a special edition of the Strang Report. Hello, everyone. I'm Stephen Strang. And today in the studio with me is none other than Dr. Steve Green. And we're going to talk about those 500 issues. So thank you for joining me in the studio today.
Well, Steve, I'm so proud of you. Stephen Strang is a friend of mine, but more than that, he's the founder and CEO of Charisma Media, which is much bigger than the single issue that he founded over 43 years ago. Before we start this interview, we'd like to bring you this word from our sponsor, and I want to tell you how much we love him, appreciate him. This is Operation Exodus USA. We'll be back just after this word from Operation USA. Hello, everyone. This is Steve Green with the Charisma Podcast Network, and I just want to talk to you a little bit about Operation Exodus. You know, hope gives meaning to life. It's a strong and confident expectation that we have as believers. And I've taught for a lot of my life that hope deferred makes the heart sick. I love that verse. It makes me remember what it feels like to not have hope. And imagine not being able to get to your home, your birthland, the place of your ancestors. Well, Operations Exodus USA is a Christian organization, and their whole purpose is to provide the same kind of hope to Jewish people who want to immigrate to Israel. According to God's word, He has a plan. He has a purpose and a promise to every Jewish person to return to their ancestral homeland. And we are called to help in their return. It's part of the call on my life and your life. Operation Exodus USA stays true to God's word. Their purpose is to assist Jewish people who want to move to Israel and to encourage Christians like you to help. Just through their ministry, Operation Exodus USA has helped tens of thousands of Jewish people return to their homeland. You can play a vital role in providing hope to Jewish people right here in the United States by just being a prayer partner and perhaps by considering making a donation. Just visit OperationExodusUSA.org. Again, OperationExodusUSA.org. I'm going to give you their phone number. It's simple. Isn't that what I like about podcasts is you can kind of stop it and play it back. But I really want you to grab this phone number for Operation Exodus USA. Here it is, 877-633-7613. One more time, 877-633-7613. Operation Exodus USA, from hope to home. Wouldn't it be great to help people get back to their home? I'm so thankful to Operation Exodus USA for sponsoring this Strang Report as we celebrate the 500th edition of Charisma Magazine. Well, we're back, and I'm so thankful again to Operation Exodus USA. So, Steve, the question that I think everybody wants to know is, at least it's a question I want to know, what was it like to get out that first magazine? You know, you're a cub reporter. You can tell us a little bit about that story. You were reporting, you're in your first job, and you had a leading of the Lord to start this magazine. Tell us about how the first edition came about.
Well, you know, I feel like I've told this story so many times. In actuality, I've probably only told it a handful of times. Mm-hmm. And of course, there's many people who've never heard. But when Charisma Magazine started having a little bit of success and I started getting a few invitations to be on some Christian talk show, the first one I was on was with Lester Sumrall on a bitterly cold day in South Bend, Indiana, I remember.
It gets cold in Indiana.
It sure does, especially that week. And I was almost embarrassed because I didn't think my story was very exciting. I didn't think I had a testimony like Nikki Cruz or, you know, a lot of other people. Mm-hmm. And then I began to realize that people could identify with the fact that I had a dream and a desire and that I was seeing it fulfilled, you know, as I moved ahead step by step. And there are a few principles that others have talked about. Despising not the day of small beginnings is right. One that Pat Robertson has talked about. And of course, he started off very small too. But you know, I, as a newspaper reporter, and that was what I was trained to do, and that was, you know, my first job was in secular journalism, I had a desire to write articles and things like that about what the Lord was doing. In fact, for the Orlando Sentinel, I did a story on Catherine Kuhlman, probably the last major media article written about her before she died, less than a year later. And the headline said, "The Incredible Catherine Kuhlman." I actually rewrote the article for the second issue of Charisma. I mean, I guess I could lay them side by side and see what I did, but, you know, there were limits to what I could do at the newspaper.
Sure.
And so I talked to the leaders at our church. It was a mega church. It was small by today's standards of mega churches, but back in the day, it was, you know, a pretty big deal. And they started some of the Jesus festivals in the area, and they actually started one of the local Christian television stations later on. You know, they're kind of entrepreneurial, and I went to them and said that I could publish a little magazine. I continued to work the newspaper for a year. And that first issue, I think we started working on it maybe around June 1st with the idea that it would come out August 1st, and it was going to be six times a year. So that was a two-month cycle. Now, as it was, it came out August 5th. That was the day it came off the press. And the backstory on it is that back in that day, you know, that was the Jesus Movement days, and the Jesus Movement people in different cities would have, we called them Jesus newspapers. You know, it was just mm-hmm. a large black and white tabloid with testimonies and pictures and kind of the hippie style, which was in kind of vogue at the time. And I actually started publishing it for the church. Somebody else had started it, but it didn't amount to a whole lot. And I took it over and published a couple issues. And in the process, got to know the printer and thought, hey, I could do this in magazine format. And I mean, you know, there are other things that entered into the decision, but it was really kind of that simple. So the issue came out August 5th. I like to joke that we were 5 days late the very first time. And the second issue, we had a cover of Catherine Kuhlman on it. And I actually told the church that we would break even. We, you know, we didn't have a whole lot of expenses, but we'd break even, or I just shut the thing down in a year. That was what I agreed. Well, at the end of the year, there was no way we'd covered all of our expenses. But everybody kind of liked it, and it was kind of growing. And actually, about that time, I quit my job at the newspaper and worked on for Charisma.
You were committed.
Full-time, yeah. You know, I told somebody recently, they were asking me about those early days, and I said, I didn't have as much a desire to succeed as I had a desire not to fail.
Mm-hmm.
I did not want to fail in different settings and with, you know, people you're mentoring and classes and once in a while an interview like this. I'll tell people that really, you have to just keep going. You have
That's
to
right.
be tenacious. And they tell about how most new ventures fail, and that is true. But a lot of times people run out of money and then they have to stop. You know, they'll raise money from investors or whatever. I never really had money from investors other than, I guess, the church was investors. But mm-hmm. what they did was they just kept paying the bills, which were fairly small as a part of their budget. And because I think they held out hope that we would finally break even, and we finally did.
How many subscribers did you have that first year?
Well, interesting question. Somewhere early in our tenure, we had to try to figure out how many subscribers.
Mm-hmm.
And we had some method to do it, and we decided that we would settle on the number 420.
Okay.
So whether or not it was really 420, I don't know, but that's the number we settled on.
Mm-hmm.
But we published 10,000 copies. 10,000.
Wow.
We gave away a lot of copies.
Mm-hmm.
The issue was 50 cents a year, and they could get a subscription for $3. That was six issues at 50 cents each, if you can believe it, and $3. And this was before the days of the personal computer, and we didn't even do our bookkeeping on computer until, you know, probably 8 years later. And we kept our subscriptions in a shoebox. They were on those punch cards, you know, with the corner mm-hmm. cut off.
IBM punch cards.
And we kept them in a shoebox. We literally did.
My goodness.
That's how small we started. So, you know, somehow God breathed on it.
Well, how many subscribers do you have now? Let's talk about that growth.
Well, it's just south of 100,000. And that was actually a goal way back then. And by God's grace, we achieved it. And in times past, have even been larger. The magazine industry has changed in ways I could not have imagined. Special interest magazines were going and blowing back then. We basically had three networks on TV. Mm-hmm. You know, there was always a handful of radio stations, most of them AM back then.
Right.
FM was just kind of coming on board.
Elevator music.
That's right. So much has changed. The church has changed too. You know, we don't think in terms of the Jesus movements. The charismatic movement has changed, even though we use the term. And it is vibrant and growing, even as the thing that happened that we reported on recently about the Send. They had 60,000 people in a stadium. And back at the heyday of the charismatic movement, there used to be that many people that would get together in a stadium, mainly the Catholic charismatics. Mm-hmm. But, you know, they had large churches back then. There are large churches now. There are probably more large churches. A lot of TV ministries that weren't around back then.
Right.
A lot of other parachurch ministries that no one had ever heard of. A lot of ministries that were well known back in that era have kind of gone by the wayside. Often it was a generation change and the ministry didn't really survive the death of its founder. So there's been a lot of churn, but that's also the nature of business in America. You know, there's always coming and going. And another thing I like to say to people is that when we started, there were a number of very significant magazines. In fact, one man confronted me one time. It was a little bit rude, but boy, it stuck in my memory. He said, "Why do we need Charisma? Because we've got this magazine and that magazine and another magazine." And today, all three of the magazines he named are long gone.
Long gone.
So one way you can succeed, maybe my listeners can learn from the fact that sometimes you can succeed by just not giving up and outlasting the competition.
Well, that brings up an interesting question. What was that founding mission? I don't think it's a lot different than it is now, but you had a mission statement, a vision. What was your heart back then? Why did you do it? And what do you see different today as you think about your mission?
Well, you know, you can have a vision and you can have a reason for being without ever writing it down. Mm-hmm. And not every organization does. On the other right. hand, some people spend lots of time and money to write it down and then they never pay any attention to it. As time passed, we did feel that we needed to articulate what it was. And it was very similar to what we do today. But I referred to this earlier that as a young newspaper reporter, and I was 24 at the time, I just wanted to write articles about what the Lord was doing. And a church magazine seemed a good way to do it. It wasn't like the church had this big vision to make an imprint in the publishing world or the journalism world. They just responded to my desire. So mm-hmm. this is what I love to do. It's what I was trained to do. And I had at least a measure of talent in that area. And if you're passionate and you do something to serve people with a good product at a good price, something that the market actually wants, that's a very important aspect mm-hmm. to it. Almost anybody can succeed, whether it's in a Christian publication like mine, or, you know, if somebody is like really into bicycling, they can probably get into the bicycle shop business mm-hmm. and make a nice living doing that. I mean, I just kind of picked that out of thin air, but there are so many things that people can do that if you have a desire to do it, you work hard, you provide good service. And I'll repeat it again, something the market wants.
Right.
A lot of people come up with some idea that's important to them, but nobody really wants it. And of course, if you go out into the marketplace, the market will tell you they don't want it.
Very quickly.
Very quickly. And thankfully, there was a need for a magazine like ours. Over time, people said we were sort of the magazine of record for the charismatic and Pentecostal community. And that was not something I wanted to do. I wanted to minister to people. And as time passed, we also realized we needed a little bit of critical mass. And, you know, what else could we do? So we started other magazines. We felt there was a need for ministry today. Over time, we took over the publishing ministry of Christian Life magazine, which goes back to 1939. So in some ways, our roots go back that far. We took over the publishing of Logos Journal, which most of my listeners never heard of, but it was the big charismatic magazine back in that era. But things changed, and we kind of absorbed it. And then more recently have published books. In fact, we've published 500 issues of Charisma and more than 2,500 books. We don't know exactly how many because they kind of come and go. And some were minor books and some were almost like print brokering that we just helped somebody out. You know, did we really publish it or not? But I know that last time we had royalties, we had 2,500 royalty statements. So that's a lot of books. And then we've also done some in television, now in podcasting. We publish in Spanish. A lot of people don't know that. We are always trying to serve people. And also, as my staff has grown, because originally it was just me and then a few volunteers, and then we had a small paid staff, I've also tried to create an environment where people who are like-minded, who think what we're doing is important, who maybe want to be in ministry in some way but feel a little more comfortable in the corporate environment, to make way for their own visions to grow and to develop. At one time, I think we grew for so many years, I think we thought that was our birthright to grow, but the publishing industry has changed enormously. When I started, as I referred to, there were no personal computers, none. Mm-hmm. We typed everything on manual typewriters. There weren't even word processors. The personal computer would have started as a word processor of some kind. There were computers, but they were the big computers in a big room with air conditioning, you know, that probably didn't have the computing power of a laptop today. In fact, someone said that there's more memory in a typical iPhone than there was in the space capsule that actually went to the moon in 1969. Now, I may be saying that wrong, but I did hear that, and it did seem to make a lot of sense. Mm-hmm. I mean, technology is so much part of our life now that we can't even hardly think without it. And there are a lot of ways that people can get information about the Lord. The YouVersion of the Bible is a little app with just all these resources about the Bible. And many ministries have web pages and television programs and now podcasts and video podcasts and everything else. So we're just trying to find a way of how the Lord is leading us to be able to continue to publish in these new areas. And I'm just thankful that we've been able to do 500 issues in the mid-1970s. I don't know that I could have envisioned that. It would have just absolutely blown my mind. Mm-hmm. And even when we finally figured out it was our 500th issue, which we're celebrating in our April issue, even though the March issue was really the one when we went back and carefully counted, because in the early days, we were not monthly. If we'd been monthly, month in and month out, it would have been an easy calculation. Some publications will actually keep a record. Now, we do too. You know, we count the issues, but then what do you call it when you count the years?
Volume.
A volume. And our volumes probably started in August when we started or something like that.
Sure.
Things have just evolved. When we started, we were not a professional organization. We had to kind of figure out this stuff as we went along. And by God's grace, it's worked.
So let's talk about that original magazine that you developed, that you laid it out. You typed probably every word in it, at least wrote it. How did it change, just the magazine itself, over these 43 plus years? How did you see the magazine evolve and to become the magazine that we deliver every month?
Well, when we've had our different anniversaries, I have talked some about that first issue. It was 32 pages. We had an article by Alex Clattenburg, who is a prominent pastor in our community today.
Still.
We had an article by George Klaus, who is still my good friend. He's retired now, but his wife actually works for our organization all these years later. I had an article by Joy Strader, who is the wife, she's now deceased, but the wife of Carl Strader, who's a prominent pastor. So we had articles by different people. I did write the cover story. The cover story was on Thurlow Spurr, who is still fairly prominent in music. He's up in his retirement years, although I don't think he'll ever retire. And back then, he probably even had a higher profile because he was really kind of at his prime. And he was actually the music director at the church. And because he was a national figure, we wrote about it. And he also was doing a lot of things having to do with music and the bicentennial, which was in that era. And I wrote an article on the bicentennial from the perspective that the First Great Awakening, which had happened maybe 30 to 40 years before, really set the groundwork in some ways for the colonies becoming independent of England. And I kind of set out the case. And didn't do a bad job, I mean, considering that I wasn't a historian, I was pretty young. But, I mean, those were the kinds of articles we did back then. And to some degree, we would do some of those articles today, even some of the same authors. Now, I did write several of the articles, And I did several of them under pseudonyms because I didn't want it to look like every article was by me. There's nothing wrong with using pseudonyms, but, you know, I just did it. We don't, of course, we don't do that anymore. And, you know, the second issue was Catherine Coleman. Of course, she was really famous. And like I said, I took the article from the newspaper. We would still do that kind of article today. The third issue, we did on Arthur Blessett. He's the one that pulled the cross around the world. And he actually ran for president. It sounds crazy, but I heard about it. We did a story on how he was going to run for president.
What year was that?
That was 1975. Mm-hmm. Actually, the issue, it would have been maybe the January issue, January, February of 76. That was the year that Jimmy Carter won. That was the year that Newsweek called the year of the evangelical. And to get on the ballot in Florida, in the primary, you had to be recognized by major media. And Arthur Blessett used charisma to persuade the people in Tallahassee to put him on the ballot. Now, he only got like 1.5%.
Right.
But he actually addressed the Florida legislature. He told me about this. I think I was vaguely aware of it at the time, and later on we connected for some reason. And he told me that story, and I thought it was very interesting. But charisma was smaller than small. You know, nobody had ever heard of it. We didn't even think it would last a year. But, you know, now that I think of it, the Lord was using it in some ways. The fourth issue, we did a special issue for one of the Jesus festivals, and we printed 40,000 copies.
My goodness.
And we gave them to everybody who came to the festival. And I still think we have some left over in the warehouse somewhere. But that was really the one that kind of put us on the map. And the following summer...
That had to be a major investment.
Yeah, well, the church did the Jesus Festival, so okay. It was somehow mixed into the budget.
Good.
And we did sell a bunch of advertising. In fact, we started getting national advertising at that point. And we had higher rates for that one issue.
Sure.
It's kind of interesting to think about it. Now, you know, I would say by the second or third year, Jamie Buckingham started doing a column for us. I remember that Charles and Francis Hunter, they really liked charisma, and they used to kind of push it at their meetings and mm-hmm. stuff. And we started having a national profile. Also, we started getting better articles. And, you know, somebody was asking me recently what I think are the best issues. Well, 500 issues is a lot of issues. That's like a pastor preaching 500 sermons and saying, which was your best sermon?
The next one.
And maybe that's a good answer. Maybe I should say it. Probably the ones that stick out of my mind are ones that I had something to do with. And I wrote a lot more of the articles in the early days. Or I'd write the ones that seemed really important. Like I remember that we found out that James Watt, the Secretary of the Interior under Ronald Reagan, subscribed to charisma. In fact, he visited Alex Glattenberg's church, who I just mentioned. Mm-hmm. And he said to Alex, we read charisma in our home. So Alex calls me all excited, you know, you wouldn't believe it. So we thought, well, we had heard that he was a Pentecostal, but we had no contact with him. So we tried and tried to go through the channels in Washington, you know, press offices, we got nowhere. So I thought, well, if he gets a magazine at home, that means we have his subscription. So we looked through the subscription list, and there in Washington, D.C. was James Watt's wife's name. And so we wrote a letter and said, Dear Mrs. Watt, we would like to interview your husband. Would you please pass this along to him because we can't get through the maze? James Watt called the office himself and like freaked out my secretary and invited us up to do an interview. And we did a very good interview.
And since then, you've been back to the White House.
A few times, yeah.
Yes.
And
what's your biggest interview you've done over these years?
Well, I'd have to say interviewing, you know, the president. I've had mm-hmm. the opportunity to interview four.
Sitting president, that's right.
Sitting, well, actually not. George H.W. Bush, yes, and George W. Bush were both mm-hmm. sitting presidents. They were both group settings, mm-hmm. but I was allowed to ask questions like you would in maybe a press conference. So I right. consider that an interview.
Sure.
With Barack Obama, he was a candidate at the time. Again, it was a group setting, but I was able to ask questions. And with Donald Trump, also when he was a candidate, of course, he's a sitting president now, and I've been promised an interview with him.
But you interviewed him alone.
Yes, that was a face-to-face, right. One-on-one interview, and you were there.
I was there. I saw every minute of it. I just remember how big his hand is. I lost my hand in his hand.
That's right, and he's a very tall, large man. You don't always see that when on TV. You know, there have been other things we've done, a lot on race relations. We have covered the black community more than any other Christian magazine, period. I think I can say that with confidence. Partly because the Pentecostal experience, you know, came right out of the black experience. And so there's a lot of overlap. Most charismatic churches are very integrated, much more so than mainline churches or even other conservative Protestant denominations. So what we've done over the years is we've tried to cover stories that were significant regardless of the person's race. So, for example, we would have done stories on T.D. Jakes when hardly anybody had heard of him. He was just emerging. And I don't want to criticize any other Christian magazines, especially one in Wheaton, but they would not have done a story on T.D. Jakes until there was some kind of controversy mm-hmm. connected with it. And there has been a little bit. He comes from a oneness background, but I have heard him explain himself, and he sounds like a Trinitarian to me. But I mean, it's, you know, it's created a little controversy. Also, in the black community, I've come to understand that oneness is a little different than it is in the white community, and it would take a lot more than this one comment to explain what I mean, but that's just one example. Then we have also written about things that are important to the black community, so the black style of music. You know, what we either do is we ignore race or we play up the distinctives. And also some things that are important in the black community, like prison reform, we've written about that. Kind of from their perspective.
Well, you wrote about Trayvon Martin. When
yes, and when the Trayvon Martin thing happened, he was a young man in 2012 that was killed, you know, in an altercation with a kind of a security guy who happened to have a gun. And it was big, big, big news. And the thing is that it happened 2.3 miles from where you and I are sitting. And so it was a local story. And unfortunately, there are a lot of local stories about young unarmed black men being killed as a part of a crime or something.
Wearing a hoodie.
Right. And this fellow thought that he was up to no good. He was from out of town. He didn't know him. And then Trayvon resented a white guy tailing him. The guy was actually a Hispanic background, it turned out. Mm-hmm. It was horrible, horrible, horrible problem. And it wasn't until President Obama was on TV saying, you know, Trayvon Martin looks like he could have been my son. And, you know, said some other things that I even realized it was a national thing. When I saw it on the news, I just thought it was they were playing up a local story. And it was a horrible thing for the black community to go through here locally. They didn't know Trayvon because he's from out of town.
Well, you made a movie of this story.
Well, not a movie. What happened was we had some meetings between pastors in the area. And one of the pastors wanted to film it for posterity. So we thought, well, okay, we'll film it. And if somebody doesn't want the cameras rolling because they're going to say something controversial, we'll turn them off. Well, we had this wonderful footage, and it was, how can we use this? Or how can this help with racial reconciliation? And so we did do a documentary. We called it Sanford, The Untold Story. We actually had a national press conference with all the major media. They were all over our area like ants at a picnic. I mean, and they were all looking for some kind of article and trying to make a big deal out of whatever. And then we had this press conference with pastors saying, we need to pray for our community and we need to love and accept each other and blah, 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 blah.
It made the news.
A bunch of them carried it live. The only thing was is that they dropped it like a hot potato when it wasn't controversial. But thankfully, our communities lived through that. The new Black Panthers said the Sanford would burn to the ground if this fellow was not convicted, because they said, we will burn it to the ground. Well, as it turned out, when the verdict came out that this man was acting in self-defense, according to Florida law, there were actually some protests that were, they weren't like really riots, but they were protests that kind of turned into small riots in other cities. But Sanford had nothing. So, you know, part of it was our role in just being leaders in the community. But also we did an issue, a special issue, just we devoted nearly the entire issue to racism in America and in the church, and kind of took the black perspective because, you know, in the black community, they see things differently. That's one reason why our country is so divided, because we don't really understand each other.
Well, we're at the end of the show, and I can't let you get out of here until I ask you a personal question about how this has affected you. You can't write for 43 years about a topic. If I write about fishing for 43 years, I'm going to know something about fishing. It'll affect me. So as you've taken on the journey of being a spiritual writer, hearing from God, hearing for the right way to cover the story, you've developed your own spiritual perspective about every one of those key stories. So how has this life formed you today? As you sit here at your age and 500 issues into Charisma, how has it affected your walk with Christ?
Well, I have a very firm belief that God is in control, that the Holy Spirit is at work in the church today.
Yes.
This is something that is not widely covered. Secular people don't understand it. Many of them are actually hostile to anything having to do with the Bible. I'm concerned that there isn't as much power in the church as maybe there should be, or certainly the Bible says. But I also have seen things ebb and flow and come and go, and there's good and bad. You know, there's good and bad in the Bible, and that's part of the human experience. But most people in the Spirit-filled church are sincere people trying to follow God, trying to hear from the Holy Spirit, trying to follow the Bible, trying to do good in their communities, trying to raise their families and vote the right way and all those kinds of things.
Right.
Are they perfect? No. But many of them are on fire for God. They take their Christianity seriously. They are givers. And the media kind of portrays all of us like a bunch of buffoons and Elmer Gantry type people. That's not true at all. So we serve that community. We try to report on it credibly. Because I'm a journalist and kind of know how the journalistic world looks at things, we're real careful to document things. We don't exaggerate. We have a pretty good track record of being clean in that way. In other words, we don't get a lot of blowback because, you know, we said or reported crazy things.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I like to say I'm in the ninth inning of my career now. I feel like I'm in about the fourth inning.
Mm-hmm.
But
Still so much new out here. There's so many ways to grow and to develop this spiritual news.
That's right. And in some ways, it seems like the culture is getting worse and worse.
Mm-hmm.
Charisma started 2 years after Roe v. Wade, long before the LGBTQ, XYZ, or whatever they call it this month, movement started. And those are just two examples. But, you know, the infanticide that is being put into law in some places, or at least proposed,
mm-hmm.
is just almost beyond the pale. Some of the decadence in our culture, I mean, used to not even be able to say minor swear words, and now they use the F-bomb on TV all the time. You know, there's a certain decadence. Even in the church, people compromise with things that we would have never compromised with, and, you know, that's a whole different discussion. And, you know, some of it's cultural and so forth. But I mean, for example, some of the young women dress are unclothed in a way that would have never been acceptable in Christian circles mm-hmm. a generation ago.
And they're in high school.
Yeah.
Right.
They're in high school, a lot of them. And, you know, it's just kind of following the culture.
Mm-hmm.
But there are new leaders coming up. There's new voices. There's a purity of spirit. It's almost as if things are getting worse and worse, and the people who serve God are getting better and better, because it's hard to be in the middle. I live in the South. We live in the South, where, you know, they call it the Bible Belt, but an awful lot of it's hypocrisy.
Mm-hmm.
People would live like the devil on Saturday night and go sit in church on Sunday morning because it was good for business. And, you know, there was this huge gray area. You almost need to be white hot for the Lord, or you're just into sin and into the world. There isn't the big gray anymore that there used to be,
mm-hmm.
and that's probably a good thing. So I'm optimistic. You know, I hope that I have set an organization and mentored leaders to follow me that continue this on into the future, just as I continued Logos Journal or Christian Life or some of the things that went
that's
before
right.
me. And, you know, in a way, who cares if magazines exist? I mean, it's just ink on paper. Like I say, you have to cut down a lot of trees to make paper before you even put any ink on it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And in the digital age, there's going to be new ways to minister people and to get out the message of Jesus Christ, which a lot of ministries are doing. And a lot of ministries are talking about the fullness of the Holy Spirit, but nobody really does an overview like Charisma. Where
right.
we try to cover all the streams, we try to help people understand the issues. We tried to build bridges and really report things that nobody else would report. So, you know, this really didn't start out to be my legacy, although I guess 500
that
issues.
Is a legacy.
I mean, we have bound issues and they take up a big shelf. At one point, I was going to try to see if we could estimate how many pages they were or how many subscribers we'd had. And I thought, you know, it's not even worth the mental effort to figure that out. It was a lot of pages, a lot of issues. And, a lot of work. Mm-hmm. And thanks be to God.
Thanks be to God. This has been a special edition of the Strang Report. I'm Steve Green. We want to thank again Operation Exodus USA. They're so important to us. They help people move from hope to home. And Steve, this is your podcast, and you have the right to close it. Guess what? We're not too far away from 500 episodes of the Strang Report. That'll be fun.
That will be fun. We'll have to figure out when that is.
Yes, sir.
And as I usually do, I close my podcast by thanking my listeners for listening, asking them to share it. And if you don't already subscribe to the Strang Report newsletter, you can do it by sending an email to newsletter.strangreport.com. We turn every podcast into a newsletter, a blog, let's say. We put it online. It's an easy way to have it delivered right into your inbox. And if you want to call us and leave a comment, we have a special line for that. It's 407-706-8476. The nice thing about a podcast is you can stop it and back it up, but I'll repeat it. It's 407-706-8476. Either make a comment or ask a question, and we'll deal with that in a future podcast. So thank you for taking your time to listen to this longer than normal podcast. But the nice thing about podcasts, unlike a radio show, is it can be as long or short as seems appropriate. So thank you for listening. And tune in again for another edition of the Strang Report on the Charisma Podcast Network. I'm Stephen Strang. God bless you.
Thank you for listening to the Strang Report with Steve Strang. To read more from Steve, visit his blog, The Strang Report, on charismamag.com. Again, it's The Strang Report on charismamag.com.
This has been a production of the Charisma Podcast Network. Steve and Joyce Strang are the founders and owners of CPN. Dr. Steve Green is the executive producer of the Charisma Podcast Network. We intend to honor God with every podcast and remain thankful to our advertisers and supporters who make these podcasts possible.